Are all scientific findings true and unchangeable? Welcome again to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author this quarter as we continue our 13-week series on biblical interpretation, how to understand the Bible, how to study it in ways that make sense. And my conversation partners throughout this quarter are Dr. Carl Cozart and Dr. Dave Thomas, my colleagues here at the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. When we think about science, we put a lot of stock in it. If a scientist makes a scientific statement, we tend to accept it and say, wow, they have data. But are all scientific findings true and unchangeable? Do you have any thoughts on this? Do you accept a scientific statement made by a scientist as the word of truth?
I think that's the way we've been trained to think. I mean, we live in a world where science has provided tremendous advantages in civilization and technology and buildings and vaccines. We wish we had one today for COVID-19.
Yeah.
But science has certainly done a number of things that have opened up doorways. And so there is kind of an assumption that science is proof and religion is somehow maybe not fiction, but it's kind of it's not as tangible. It's not as concrete as science. But we know that science is something that's also evolving all the time, where better arguments, new understandings take place. So I'm not sure if I'd call science true. In a sense, yes, but is it the ultimate truth? I would say probably no in that sense.
Well, Brian, my answer is a little complicated here because science is a particular way of knowing. It's a particular way of handling data and producing knowledge. But I think that we have, just as people in past years overplayed knowledge by way of revelation, you know, there was a time when people thought the Bible told you everything. Just as people overprivileged knowledge by way of revelation in the past, we today, I'm quite sure, overprivileging knowledge by way of science. Science is actually a way of looking at the material world. It has nothing to say of that which is not made of matter and energy. And even within that, it makes a lot of mistakes. And now, scientists are humble. They don't talk about proofs anymore. They talk about probabilities. And, you know, when you look at a scientific way of knowing, it's a process that I as a human being control. I have the hunch. I set up the experiment. I do the interpretation. And I, in a sense, announce the findings. If you're talking about people, for example, science is useless. There's no experiment you can do. You can't find out about a person by way of scientific experimentation. You find out about them by self-revelation. And this is where I think the Bible becomes particularly powerful. It is the record, the attested record of people who had experiences with God and their reflections on them. And so, science and religion are talking in two very different worlds. I also think that we have to be careful because science, what has science actually found in terms of facts? And believing in no God or being an atheist is not required by science because no factual evidence has been found either for or against God by science. It doesn't exist. I think we need to be humble here, realizing that Not to overprivilege either the scientific way of knowing or the revelational way of knowing. That I still remember a teacher of mine once said, we need to realize that what we don't know is probably far more impressive than what we do know. And I think to be humble about what you know, and I'm very mindful when scientists make pronouncements about God, they've gone way beyond science. They've gone into ideology. And there's an interesting book, if anybody wants to read it, Science is a Blind Spot, which talks about how many people bridge from factual knowledge to speculative knowledge and don't see that they've made the shift.
So you're suggesting that just because a scientist makes a statement doesn't make it a scientific statement?
No, and it doesn't mean he's right. And you know, all you got to do is ask who paid for the study, and then you realize the skepticism that emerges. Now, I'm not here denouncing science. I'm very glad for science. But I want to add also here that science has not been an unmitigated blessing. It is the educated and scientific man who gave us the atomic bomb and who knows how to mess around with viruses to make them worse, who knows, you know, it's all our discoveries that are destroying our environment. So science is not an unmitigated blessing. It's actually a dangerous tool that also has created great opportunities. So I think we need to be humble, more humble about this whole thing than most.
I remember hearing a story about the great, great scientist, mathematician, Albert Einstein, and that Einstein had a theory of the universe that he believed that all of the stars and planets were fixed in the heavens, and that the universe was eternal and had been there forever. And this was his view until Edwin Hubble had created his telescope and began to study the red shift in the light spectrum coming from the stars and the galaxies. And he says this red shift was evidence that all of the planets and stars and galaxies in the entire universe outside of our solar system were moving away from one another at very high rates of speed, suggesting that at some point all of the planets and all of the galaxies and black holes and nebula as we understand them had originated at a single point. And before this, the idea of what we would call a Big Bang was just a thought of as a farce. He then was invited by Edwin Hubble to go and take a look at the stars and to see the red shift for himself. And upon seeing it, he said, "My findings have most certainly been false." But they weren't just findings, they were presuppositions, like you're arguing, Dave, that he had made speculations about what he thought the universe would be like. Hubble's telescope showed that he wasn't right.
Yeah, but scientists, the ones I know, are quite humble about this. They know that what they're proposing might be wrong. Some theologians are not willing to admit that maybe their perception of things is a little bit off. But you think how many times people have changed theological opinions over time. So I think a little humility all the way around is in good order.
Now, let me move this idea from science to biblical interpretation for a moment. How humble should we be when we come to the biblical text? Is it possible to read Genesis, for instance, and misunderstand the teaching of Genesis and thus some of the conflicts between science and the Bible are really nothing more than a misunderstanding of science and of the Bible together? Is it possible that our conflicts between the two are not just scientific and not just biblical, but maybe a little of both? That my understanding of Genesis, for instance, when I read Genesis accounts of the flood, and I read Genesis accounts of creation, and then I read Mesopotamian literature surrounding the world of the Bible, and I see that there are other flood accounts and there's other creation accounts. How should I read those accounts? Should I read the biblical account as just extending out of those other accounts? Did the Bible writers write about Genesis and the creation of the world and the flood as extensions of Mesopotamian legend and myth? Or are they trying to record historical events? And are they trying to record history exactly like I would record history?
That's really a lot of questions all in one.
It is.
Questions. I mean, I think that it's interesting that there are other flood stories that exist in the Mesopotamian world. But at the same time, what I find in scripture is very different than those stories. The God that we see in the stories of the Old Testament is very different than the gods we find like in the Epic of Gilgamesh and others. So I think they are doing different things, but at the same time, I would agree with you and say that, to go back to your original question, I think we can have a very narrow view of Scripture, a narrow view of Scripture that prevents us from seeing greater truth in Scripture, and we need to be on our guard to make sure that we are not closed to a better, deeper understanding of those stories. So, for example, we can go to those stories and ask the wrong questions, right? We can say, "Is it a 24-hour day?" I don't think that really is the purpose of the account in Genesis. The account in Genesis, I think, has a bigger purpose of providing meaning and purpose and direction. And so we can actually undermine the meaning of Scripture by having a very limited, focused view of what we think is actually saying.
Mm. And it's not that the days are necessarily something other than 24 hours.
Exactly.
But when we try and say that's all that it's trying to teach, then we miss the bigger picture.
That's where I think that's where our pride comes in, because we have this idea that somehow I have all the answers, And so I can kind of defiantly say, well, this is the answer. And that's really my pride speaking up. And I need to be humble enough to always allow for different perspectives to be shared, because I'm not God. I don't have all the answers.
Mm. You know, when we think about the universe and how amazing it is, Genesis speaks about a creator who makes the world and creates order out of disorder. If I go to Genesis 1 and I see that, Dave, you mentioned, I think in our last lesson, that the Bible was created out of water, and in the beginning, God is there creating. And yet it says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then it tells us about that account of what that creation looked like. But the earth appeared to already be here when God began to do the work on it. It was covered with water. It was this primordial ball. And is it possible that the earth as a planet existed well before the 7 days of creation? I think certainly that's possible. And so fighting for a young earth versus an old earth, some of those questions certainly could be answered either way from Scripture. But I'd like to take a look in our last couple of minutes here. In what ways do you see the universe in which we live as finely tuned or carefully made for the inhabitation of life?
Well, it's the right distance from the sun. It has water that has remained in liquid form all through the what some people think are billions and billions of years. I don't think the world is that old, but I mean, to have water maintained in the liquid state for that long a period of time, given the highs and lows of things, is remarkable. The gravitational pull has to be just right. But the fine tuning, there's a lot of very, very interesting stuff in it that I don't have right committed to memory, but some of it has to do even with the parameters in which life itself could happen. And they're very narrow, but they happen to pertain on planet Earth.
Well, I think with the current COVID-19 situation, it shows us just how fragile and delicate life is. You know, a virus that comes out every year, it challenges with viruses, but sometimes they can be so deadly. Life is so fragile.
And yet our habitable zone here in terms of nearness to the sun, in terms of the environment, some people would even say the energy within each atom has to be so precise. And I heard an example given by a creation scientist who argued that the biblical account was probably as accurate as it could be for its day, because the world in which we live is so finely tuned, so carefully crafted, that if you walked into a room and saw hundreds of dials and buttons, and every one of them was an adjustment to make to some parameter of the universe, Dave, like you mentioned, the gravitational pull or water,
the amount of oxygen in the air,
the type of oxygen matters, because an oxidizing environment would kill any sort of reaction very quickly. So when we think about these things, if you were to adjust any one single dial a very tiny bit, any one of those, the whole creation falls apart. And to me, that's a big indication that God did something amazing at creation. There's much in the Bible we could talk about, but I think what we come down to is the Bible starts with God as creator, and we end in Revelation with that as well. But Dave and Carl, thank you so much for taking the time to walk through this study with me. And to those of you listening, thanks for your support for the Good Word. I'm Brant Berger.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.